yours, El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And welcome as we commence another news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And truth is our bitch here, so we're taking you places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, so you just kind of have to buckle in. And I advise you to give this radio show 2 weeks, and I mean that. You hear a lot of people say that. Give our show a chance because, believe me, most guys that say that, you don't have to give their show a chance. It'll take about 2 days, and you'll know whether it's good or bad. But our radio show, you got to give it 2 weeks because, in the words of Noah Cross to Jake Gittes, you may think you know what's going on, Mr. Gitts, but you don't. So,
what's that?
It's from the movie Chinatown, bud, so just never mind. You're too young. You're too young and stupid.
Thanks.
You're welcome. All right, 877-876-PHIL, and our website, philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. If you go there, you get a backstage pass. You can watch live streaming video of the show right now. Live streaming, we have live streaming video of the show. We have our audio archives of thousands of hours of radio. We have our podcasts. We have our news feeds. We have a variety of other miscellaneous Phil Hendry fun projects, such as television interviews and TV pilots. We've got another TV project coming up that I'll tell you about. We have, there is a trailer online for a movie that I was in 2 summers ago called, and I'm giving you all the information that I have, because I did a little part in this film called Last Call, and I just got an email from the crew today saying the movie is out, the trailer is out. My scene is a surprise scene, so I don't know if it's in the trailer or not, but it's got a great cast called Last Call, and, Tom Arnold's in it. And, Dave Foley, who was, his dressing room was right next to mine because he was walking his dog. And
who?
Dave Foley. And,
what dog?
He was his dog. He was walking his dog. Okay.
Did you say hi to him?
Yeah, you say hello?
Yes, I said hello.
Get an autograph.
No, I didn't ask him for an autograph. I'm working in the same thing with him. So in any event.
Yeah, but just get an autograph.
Will you shut up, bud? I'm not getting an autograph. I'm in a movie with a guy. Oh, by the way, it's not great working with you. Can I get your autograph? I have gotten pictures. That's probably what I should have done. That's the next best thing to get an autograph. Anyway, when we find that, we will post it on our website. You guys may find it before I do. It's called Last Call. So, philhendryshow.com is the website. We want to start our program by informing you that also on our homepage is a list of great affiliates. We're adding them every day, and I know we've got a few new ones in the Northwest, so head on over to our webpage and take a look at our affiliate list. There is one near you if you are listening to us right now. For instance, I don't know, if you're watching the video cast but you're not sure where a local affiliate is, be sure to check that out. We have with us Art Griego, who's going to join us. Mr. Griego is a retired commercial pilot as well as a private pilot. And we're going to talk about safety when it comes to owning a private aircraft. There have been some extremely disturbing stories in the news of late, a few stories that are rather fanciful. And we want to just talk with Art a little bit here about the feasibility, the reality, the wisdom of non-professionals flying, I think is probably the best way that we can put this. And Art Griego joining us from Santa Monica. How are you, Art?
I'm doing good, Phil. How are you doing?
Great. The first thing I wanted to ask you, when I said fanciful, what did you tell me about Paul Allen? Paul Allen, by the way.
Yeah.
Paul Allen, excuse me. I was on mic. I didn't go to the phone.
That's okay.
Paul Allen is as you know, Phil, he's the multimillionaire behind Microsoft. And Paul Allen wants to build the world's largest aircraft so that he can eventually travel to space. I don't know whether this is feasible or not. It's that kind of a venture that worries me, because I think when you have amateurs attempting flight, you can sometimes cut the corners on safety. And I know that Paul Allen's a little different. He's a man with a great deal of money. He's obviously got pilots that work for him. He has professional engineers. That may not be the greatest example, but Richard Branson is another. Branson wants to give away trips to space, I guess, in contests.
Well, he has some terminal that he's built, right?
Yeah, he has a space terminal from which will the vision is from which aircraft or a craft can travel into space and you know, just like any amusement, I guess you can give rides to people to see that. Those things are, you know, obviously being funded by people with money, and you could do the proper safety checks. But what I'm really concerned with, Phil, are the average private pilots. You're right. We've had a great many high-profile accidents of late, and I worry, quite honestly, Phil, that we've got a lot of people who are not qualified to fly aircraft.
Well, when you say not qualified, everybody who gets a pilot's license, who owns an aircraft, has a license. Ostensibly, they're qualified, right?
Well, that's the hope, but that is not, in my opinion, always the reality. I think we've got people, unless you're a professional, and by that I mean unless you make your living in some way, shape, or form as a pilot, and that is you have flown commercially, you've flown with the safety of passengers, your professional life depends on how safe you keep people and how safe you keep freight and how quickly you're able to deliver freight and get people to where they're supposed to be. I don't think that you can call yourself, certainly you can't call yourself a professional, and I don't know whether you're going to be the safest person in the world to fly with.
Now, without getting into some specifics, you're talking about people that have been flying for pleasure, people that have been flying for trips, let's say, for Christmas vacations, people that have been flying for, just the odd amusement on the weekend to relax.
Yeah, and look, let me be clear. If you're flying by yourself, if you get out on a Saturday morning or a Sunday and you decide you want to take off and fly your aircraft because you want to relax, that's one thing. But if you are telling members of your family, let's go fly somewhere, you are essentially playing Russian roulette with them.
Why? Why are you doing that? I mean, now these are people that people that they love, right?
Well, of course, but even people that you love and even people you think you're protecting, you're not always protecting because there's a million and one things you got to think of. Let me tell you something, Phil. A lot of aircraft, a lot of private aircraft, there are facets of the operating systems of those aircrafts, parts of those aircrafts, some of which need to be inspected every 25 hours of flight. Every 25 hours of flight. Now, you can well imagine how on top of things you got to be to make sure that that aircraft is safe. Now, how many of these guys that I see on the weekends, and I'm out here at Santa Monica Airport, and I see them, you know, they're nice guys, and they want to know about aircraft, and they'll come over to the hangar or some of the places where I am with some of the mechanics, and they want to talk, and it's a little embarrassing. I don't really want to necessarily be seen with them, not because I'm a snob, but because I don't want anybody thinking that I am friendly with these kind of, hillbillies. You know, that's what we call them, but they're not.
Well, all right. I mean, you're talking about something social. What is the problem? These guys are out there on the weekends doing what? What do you see?
Well, I'm telling you right now, these guys are not anybody that I'd fly with. I see them coming out. They got their little cooler of sandwiches, and they're loading their kids into the plane. And I can tell you, Phil, if it was the movie Dracula, if you remember in the movie Dracula where the man crosses himself as he sees the castle or something, I would do the same were I of a religious, if I had a religious nature like that, I would, every time I see a guy putting his kids in an aircraft, I would cross myself because...
Well, that's a little dramatic.
No, it's not really.
Why?
Because for the very reason I told you, you don't know when you look at that guy loading his wife and kids into a private airplane. Sure, he took his little airplane lessons, and he knows how to make the plane go up in the air, and you know, he probably go, wee, you know,
Well, aren't you kind of, you're belittling a lot of these guys. I mean, some of these men are very, very serious. They take their flying very seriously. You know, they're not there to hurt their families.
No, I'm not saying that they are, Phil, but I'm saying you can't take a guy that serious who is a pleasure or leisure flyer. He's not a professional.
Every man that flies who does not have a professional connection to flight, every man that flies who is simply a pleasure flyer or a leisure flyer, as you call him, is not safe to be with?
I didn't say that. I'm simply saying, and you can take this any way you want, that when I see that guy get into an aircraft with his family, I want to cross myself, and I'm not Catholic.
So in other words, what you're saying, it's kind of a ridiculous thing to say, though, isn't it?
No, it's not. I mean, Phil, look.
Well, you want to cross yourself, meaning what? These people, God help them?
Yes. Yes. Well, absolutely.
So what you're telling me, then, is the following. We need to make the requirements for piloting an aircraft, even if you're a non-professional, much more stringent. We need to make sure that those aircraft are being inspected the way they're supposed to be inspected.
Well, yes, we do, but how are you going to enforce that? You can't. It's not going to happen. We don't have the money for the enforcement. We don't have the bureaucracy. No one is going to go for the bureaucracy that's going to take to enforce that kind of thing.
Well, if we're talking about the safety of people...
That's exactly what we're talking about. That's exactly what we're talking about. But no one is going to go for the enforcement of something like that. My solution is simply this. To come on programs like yours and to let people know. And I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it. If there are any kids listening and your father wants to take you on an airplane...
No, I'm not going to let you do that, okay?
Philip.
I'm not going to let him do that. Okay, dump that. Dump that. Dump that comment. No, Art, I can't allow that.
Why not?
Because you're talking about... You're advising children against their parents. I would not... You can't do that.
All I'm saying, Phil, is if Daddy wants to take you...
Okay, cut him off. 877-876-PHIL. How do I talk to him and tell him that we can discuss this, but I don't want him talking directly to children and scaring them? 877-876-PHIL is the number here in the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as we talk to Art Griego about the relative safety of flying as a private pleasure flyer and how safe is your family. 877-876-PHIL. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Let me go off like that.
Phil Hendry Show.
I understand that. Welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me here is Art Griego as we're talking about the safety of private pilots, private flying. And how safe is it in light of some of the stories that we read? There is a very prominent story. I don't want to get into the particulars of it. It just happened today, as a matter of fact, in New Jersey. And you know the one I'm talking about, right? I don't want to get into the particulars of it, all right?
Well, Phil, I understand you don't want to get into the particulars, but we've got people that are out there flying. They're flying with family members that are telling them, let's go, you know, fly in the aircraft and go and have a wonderful afternoon. And they're getting into an aircraft with some individual who could very well cost them their lives. And yet they trust them. How do you say no to your father? If your dad says, let's go flying, how do you say no to him?
I understand.
I know you don't want me to directly address the kids, and I won't do that. But I'm just simply asking the adults then, if you get into an aircraft to fly, and you say, let's go, kids, how do you know that your children are not fearing for their lives? And the most abject, stark fear that their young lives will be extinguished as soon as they climb into an aircraft with you, their father.
And do you really believe that children, if they feel that frightened, would not say something?
Oh, kids say things. And what do parents say to them? Oh, stop. You'll be fine. Oh, stop. You'll be fine. Yeah. There's a very interesting thing that happens, Phil. If the aircraft explodes in the air, you can't say that to a kid anymore.
And why again are you, this is to me, that's worst case scenario, and I think it's fear-mongering.
All right, I understand that, but you realize if your aircraft explodes in the air, you can't say to the kid, oh, stop, you're making a big deal out of nothing. You know that, right?
Of course I do. 877-876-PHIL. What about private pilots? Are they as safe as we might think they are? Are they endangering their families? Are they endangering their friends when they take them up flying with them? Let's take a phone call here from Fred. Fred, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Art Griego. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, hi. I was wondering if your guest is familiar with the Paul Wellstone crash in Minnesota, where Senator Wellstone was being flown by a 20-year experienced pilot, and the plane went down.
Was he a professional pilot, do you know?
20 years.
Well, no, I know he'd been flying for 20, but was he a professional pilot at the time that he was flying Senator Wellstone? I don't think he was.
Well, they said... They said that it was the book that I read about Senator Wellstone said that the plane got hit by some kind of electric magnetic field. There were garage doors opening in the community, and anyway, that's why the plane crashed.
Well, no, that sounds like it's concocted. I wouldn't believe that. I think what happened was you had a pilot who, represented himself as something that he wasn't. And when he got into a sticky situation, he lost control of the aircraft. I hope that helps you.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Just remember, these guys, Phil, a guy that claims that he's a 20-year pilot. And
Who was the man that was flying Senator Wellstone?
I don't have no idea, but anytime someone tells me, oh, yeah, I've been flying for 20 years, the first thing I ask them, have you been flying professionally or have you just been out jockeying around the skies, taking your wife on a sightseeing tour of the Grand Canyon or something like that? I mean, what do you mean by 20 years of flying? And most of the time, you're going to find out it's some guy that was flying up and down the coast of San Diego, and he's going to see grandma or something like that. In other words, it's got nothing to do with professional flying. So when a guy says to you, I got 20 years of flying, and you are in, I can give you an experience of mine, Phil, flying out to Catalina one afternoon with a friend of mine who I knew flew, but I didn't think he flew professionally. And I said, you're not a professional pilot, are you? He said, all right, I've been flying 15 years. I said, but you're not a professional. Did you ever fly professionally? He said, no, I haven't. I remember thinking that I remember feeling that I'd been tricked into getting into that aircraft. And I said to him, if I make it out of this alive, I'm going to hold you responsible for what you put me through.
And make it out of what alive?
The flight that we were taking. Because
this man was not a professional pilot.
He was not a professional. He'd been flying, he'd been joyriding for 15 years. He's a joy, what we call a joy jockey, or we call these guys air jockeys or joy jockeys. And what we mean by that is, or air personalities, because they're flying around. What we mean by that is they don't fly professionally. And I said to him, as soon as I found out he wasn't a pro, that he'd been air jockeying it for 15 years, I said, if I make it out of this alive...
Well, make it out of what alive? Was there anything wrong at that time?
Phil, I'm trying to be clear. Yes, he's...
No, I mean with the aircraft. Was the aircraft losing altitude? Was it...
No, there wasn't anything wrong with the aircraft, but there was something wrong with the pilot, is what I'm trying to tell you.
And so immediately, as soon as he told you, I've been flying 15 years, but I'm not a professional, you thought you were in danger.
I knew I was in danger. I knew I was in danger. And I said to him, and again... If you are a pilot and you are telling your children, hey, kids, let's go and fly around on the weekend, and you're not a professional, and you have just put the deepest, darkest fear into your children that they're not going to come back from that flight alive, I suggest you rethink where your hobby is.
Well, unless we get some evidence, Art, on kids that are really fearing this kind of thing.
Well, I mean, are kids going to tell you?
But, I mean, we really need to know whether kids are afraid that their daddy said, let's go flying for this weekend, I'm scared to death.
I've talked to them. I've talked to a lot of kids who've told me that when their father says, we fly up to Hyannis for the weekend, what if they're, I don't want to make a joke, but if your dad was John Kennedy Jr. and he said,
let's take a flight to Hyannis for the weekend?
Yeah. You going to feel good about that? Of course you're not. And that's what we're talking about here.
All right. Art Griego with us, 877-876-PHIL, as we continue to discuss the safety of private pilots and private aircraft and these private little jaunts that they tend to take and do take. And there have been some horrific accidents in recent days, one of them taking place today in New Jersey over an interstate. and more news like that. We'll be back with more from Art Griego and your phone calls at 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Be right back.
Oh, God.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
I apologize on that.
I understand, but all right, we're back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. With me is Art Griego as we talk about the private pilots of America and the world and the private plane accidents that we've been seeing and this particularly horrific one that happened today, and there's been others. And Art, you're simply saying that private pilots, every time they get up there, they're rolling the dice, and if they take family members or friends with them, it's a death sentence is what you said.
I did not say death sentence.
Well, you said you're crossing yourself, like in that Dracula movie, is what you said.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, and I don't make any excuses for that. When I see a man get into a private plane with his family, and this guy during the week is an investment banker, or during the week he owns a pawn shop, or I don't know what he does, or he's a fisherman or something, and then on the weekends he's getting his entire family, children, innocent children, who trust their father, and they put him into the aircraft, and now he's taking off and he's flying, and forgive me for saying this because I got into trouble and they banned me from the airport for a 2-week period, but I had sent a bon voyage card, and I shouldn't have done it. It was a birthday party that the kids were having, and they were flying, and I sent a bon voyage. And
what is that supposed to mean? That's very bad taste.
It was very bad taste. You're right. It was a bad joke. But that's the way a lot of us think, and I've been drinking, and there are a lot of things going on in there.
You sent to a child a bon voyage card when they were going on a birthday party flight.
Yeah, they were going to Catalina. And I apologized.
In other words, all right, let me take a phone call.
No, but I want to finish my point, Phil, if I could.
Go ahead, then we're going to get a phone call on.
Okay, I just wanted to say that that day that I had sent the bon voyage card, I had been at the hangar. I was over at Hangar 12. I was talking to Jeff Rudy and a couple of the pilots. We'd been passing a bottle. It was not right of me. The method was wrong, but I think the message was right, which is basically, where are you going? I'm going on a flight with my dad. Bon voyage.
Oh, that's really great. It's a child you're talking to.
I understand that.
So you're frightening the kid.
Well, I said the method was wrong. The method was wrong.
877-876-PHIL here. 877-876-7445. Art Griego here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Here is Mark. Mark, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Art Griego. Go ahead, sir.
You know, I literally learned to fly a plane before I learned to drive a car. I've lived and flown in Alaska all my life, and I have never known fear until the time I was 14 and had to climb into a commercial aircraft. The safety and stuff that is involved in small private aircraft, and I know this because my stepfather is an AI. That's airframe and internal. He's a certified mechanic. And when you're dealing with a small aircraft like a Cessna, that thing mechanically is gone through once a year. That's your annual inspection. Then you've got your 100-hour inspection. As long as the pilot is competent, there's not an issue. We fly thousands, literally thousands of flights a day here in Alaska.
Are you a professional? Are you a professional or are you a private pilot? What are you?
I'm a private.
What are you telling me?
I was a private pilot.
Well,
my whole family are private pilots. Dad was a private pilot. Mom was.
So you don't do it. So you don't do it for money. You don't do it for money. You do it for pleasure.
No. Well, do that and work. When I grew up...
Wait. Now, see, this is what I'm asking. Are you working or are you a pleasure flyer? What do you do?
Well, I fly whenever I need to. It's Alaska, guy. that you have to follow.
Excuse me, sir. You know, I know Alaska's really important to you, but the rest of us live down here in civilization. Okay. So what I'm asking you is...
Hold on. Let me ask. Mark, hold on. What he's asking is this. Are you a... You fly professionally, then. You use your aircraft for work. Is that right?
Well, I use it to get... Well, when I was flying, before I moved to Anchorage, when we were flying around, it was to get to work, yeah.
I see. All right. So it's just a commuter. I see. So you just commute, but you're not using it. You're not a commercial pilot. You're not a freight pilot, anything like that.
No. Although
okay.
I have air cargo up here for 3 years.
You're not a professional. All right. So you're not a professional. So therefore, when you fly, and you're flying over a populated area, you say you're flying over Anchorage?
Yeah.
So that's, there's a lot of potentially dead people under you.
Well, what does that mean, there's a lot of potentially dead people under him?
He said he's not a professional.
Well,
that
let's talk about professionals for a minute. It was a professional pilot.
So when he flies...
Stevens into the side of a mountain.
Everyone is dead, potentially.
Look, training...
Everyone's dead.
Training and experience... Hey, I'm letting you speak.
That's true. I understand, but think of what you're saying.
Just as much as it can be your ally. Lots of professional pilots, like the one that flew Ted Stevens, get overconfident in their ability because they think they're a professional and they think they know better than anyone else. And it's the same thing.
Well, I don't know.
The feel of an 18-wheeler, or whether you get the feel of a freight train, or whether you get.
I don't know the intention of. I don't know the intention of the guy that flew Ted Stevens. All I know is, we've got these people. You say when you're a private pilot, you get all these inspections and all this mechanical stuff done. Well, okay, that's nice. Guess what? You're not the only...
Secure and safe.
Well, you're not the only... Well, I have to tell you, you're not... That's not what's being done by private pilots, okay? I don't know what to say.
It is. It's required by...
Well, no, it's not.
You bet it is. And if they're not...
No, it isn't.
They need to be fined and dealt with for breaking the law, for committing a...
Oh, well, sure. And we ought to run the mafia out of business... Well, we ought to run the mafia out of business, but the fact is we got a lot of... We've got guys like, and I don't know about you, but you sound like you're okay, but I wouldn't want to get in an aircraft with him. And
who?
The gentleman is talking.
Why?
He's not a pro. If I got into an airplane with him, what would happen to me could very well be what happened to that family on Interstate 287. A ball of fire.
Okay. All right. Well, if you get into an aircraft with a pro, the very same thing can happen to you that happened to Ted Stevens, because that man was
less of a chance. Less of a chance.
I disagree.
Way less of a chance. Way less.
Because of weather conditions and because he was overconfident. Period. End of story. He should.
Well, I don't know that it said.
Quite.
How do you know it said overconfident? Is that what it said in the report? The NTSB said, and he was overconfident.
Yeah, I doubt it. You bet. That's what pilot error is. He made a mistake. He made an error in judgment. He went when he should not have.
Well, and also one other thing that you don't take into consideration. Ted Stevens was not a very popular guy.
Several others.
Ted Stevens was not a popular guy at the time. I don't know whether that was done on purpose.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
You
got to be kidding.
No. Think about it. Think about it. The guy, Ted Stevens was not popular. Maybe it was, call it what you want, jihad. It's not jihad, but it's...
A suicide? Because Ted Stevens wasn't popular? Wow.
Popular in Alaska. He almost won re-election even with the quote-unquote defunct conviction, which got thrown out anyhow.
Well, that so says you.
Dude, right. I'm here. You're not. I grew up here. I know Ted Stevens. I knew the man.
You knew him. You knew Ted, then you knew. All right? If you knew Ted Stevens, then you knew that guy was bat crap crazy. And
that's not even a respectful comment.
But you know he was.
All right. Mark, thank you for your... there you go. Thank you for your expertise, sir. I appreciate it very much. Thanks. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Jamaica. I'm sorry, I'm probably mispronouncing your name, miss.
Jamaica.
Yes, dear, and Jamaica, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
What did you say your name?
Jamaica.
Hello, Jamaica. This is Art Griego.
Hello. Believe that finding you.
I believe that... Got a little bit of a cold, a little bit of the flu. but the family's better.
Oh,
you know,
cool.
I felt like we were the family of John Adams. You're like, we got tuberculosis, not that smallpox.
Okay, fine. Jamesia, go ahead.
I just believe that if you, I mean, it's just like if going to the doctor. Just because someone says that they have so many years, you wouldn't just go to any doctor. So why would you just jump into a plane with anyone just because they said they have so many years in flying? I mean, that just
exactly.
sounds crazy.
That's exactly my point. That's exactly my point. And a lot of these guys, like, you get some of these guys, no offense to the gentleman I just talked to, Phil, but he's a bush pilot up in Alaska, not a bush pilot, but he's an Alaska pilot. A lot of those guys have their experience flying tourists in so they can take pictures of a bear, you know, squatting over a leaf or I don't know, and then they fly them out, and that's what they do. Now, that can't be that tough. I've never done it, but how tough is it to take off and fly into a tree and land and, you know,
it's not, what are you talking about? They're flying long distances over, lakes, over wilderness. If the plane goes down, they're stranded, you know.
If the plane goes down, but I don't know how difficult that could be. So this lady's right. If a guy says, I will fly you out to, like that kid, Tim Treadwell, I'll fly you out to the bear maze in Alaska and you can land and you can look at the bears. This guy Treadwell had a fascination with bear dump. I'm not kidding.
And all right, that's fine.
Okay, well, I just, and then, are you going to trust a guy, Jamesia, who says, I have experience flying in Alaska, taking people out to look at bear turd? No.
Heck
you're
no.
Not.
I mean,
okay.
Just, I mean, that's just something that you think about when you have a family. You just don't, I mean, that's just like someone saying that, you know, I've operated before. I've operated on someone before. Okay.
My kids very
are
good point.
Terrified of you because you're not professional. You just came
very
out
good,
of the
yeah.
pawn shop from working. So how am I going to trust you? So
guy came out of the pawn shop.
That's a very good point, Phil. Can you imagine a family friend saying, well, let me take your tonsils out. Why? I've had experience. Excuse me?
Yeah.
So I'm going to get up in an aircraft with someone. Well, how long have you been flying? Oh, I've got hundreds of hours flying back and forth between, you know, where Yogi the Bear lives. I got to tell you.
Well, you're minimizing and insulting people that fly in Alaska, that fly those wilderness flights, those bush flights. I don't think you should do that. I think that that's a very specific kind of flying with specific needs. And you're right. I mean, if something does go wrong, they're stranded. You know.
Well, I don't want to get up in an aircraft with a guy. If I go down, I'm not going to die in the air crash. I'm going to die at the hands or the paws of a grizzly bear. So if you can imagine, the plane crashes, and while you're staggering out of the wilderness for help, you're set upon by a family of bears. What about that, Jamesia? Have you thought about that? You know, there's a story, and I don't know if you remember Goldilocks?
Yes.
Is the caller there yet? Goldilocks.
Forget about Goldilocks.
Goldilocks. What?
I know what Goldilocks did. Goldilocks had. You know, you're making a joke out of this, which I appreciate.
No, I am not. No, I am not. Ask the lady. Do you want to crash only to be set upon by three big bears? Or would you rather die in the crash? Or would you rather land safely? I take number three. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Jamesha, thank you very much for your call. Thank you. 877-876-PHIL. I think when you make a joke out of it.
I'm not making a joke out of it.
When you're talking about Goldilocks.
I'm talking about Goldilocks as a way of saying, Phil, you can die in a plane crash. You can survive the plane crash, thank God, only to stagger out of the wilderness with just a flaming wreck behind you, waving down a state trooper, and just as he's pulling over, you're set upon by bear. Claws out, 8 feet tall, polar bear.
Wow.
Yeah, Yeah, you bet.
All right, let's take a break here. 877-876-PHIL. I've actually seen a polar bear. It was stuffed, but it was standing up. If you've ever been to the Dodger Club, well, I'll tell you about it when we come back. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. It has something to do with Walter O'Malley.
What?
Truth.
We'll be right back.
Bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Walter O'Malley.
World famous
Yes, they did.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. With me is Art Griego. Mr. Griego, for 25 years, was a commercial pilot, flew for one of the major airlines, and also flew freight for a freight carrier, and was a private. It was in private business as a commuter pilot, and now just sort of semi-retired, Art. So you are one of those guys that people talk about, right?
Well, no, except that I've got credentials.
Well, so do these other guys.
All right, okay, they have credentials, but what I'm saying is, if you fly with me, you're not going to be in any problem, except for the fact that I, as I've said, I've had a drinking problem in the past. I don't take people with me. I mean, if I do, it's because they insist. My wife sometimes will say, come on, take me for a flight. Let's go. My wife flies as well. But she knows what the score is. If she flies with me, she knows that at any moment, it could all come to an end. And
you're what? I find that so difficult to understand.
Phil, it's the way it is. Any private pilot.
All right, 877-876 Phil. Now, the story here of Bill Calcavecchia. Who's he?
All right, Bill Calcavecchia was a very dear friend of mine who flew a bush run in Alaska from Kodiak all the way into the Bear Maze, and I think Bill was one of the pilots one year that would take Tim Treadwell into the Bear Maze when he'd spend the summer in there.
And Tim Treadwell, by the way, is the grizzly man, right?
Yeah, the famous grizzly man who lost his life to a grizzly bear. And, and in many ways, you can say that Tim Treadwell lost his life because of an inexperienced pilot, because he was flown in there and dropped off and then basically attacked and eaten. And
no, he wasn't flown in and dropped off and then attacked. He was flown in, dropped off, and he did his studies. And
what do you mean his studies? What is that? He did not. He wasn't sent in there by.
He went in and did what he considered to be study. He worked as a. He was an amateur biologist. He was an amateur zoologist. Nonetheless, he kept detailed records and, in his own way, amassed a very valuable a resource of information that zoologists and animal behaviorists and so on and so forth use. So you can't really say that his, you know, the guy was just some joke, you know.
Well, all right. But I mean, okay, whatever you say. I mean, I don't know anything about it. I'm just telling you that this guy went in there, and the next thing you know, if I was a bush pilot, I wouldn't have taken him in there. But anyway, Bill Calcavecchia and I were flying in. I was with him one day because he was going to go in and pick up some guys had been up the river, and they were doing some king salmon fishing and so forth. They'd been camping out. They were doing a little bit of kayaking, or they canoed up the river a ways. What happened then is your worst nightmare. We lost altitude. It was a fuel line. All of the things that you don't think are going to happen when you're flying with a pro. And that's when I asked Bill. I said, are you a professional, or is this some joyride? And that's when he came clean.
And what did he say?
He said, we're just out pleasure flying. I told you we were going up to pick people up because I thought you'd go with me then. So I looked at him and I said, you lied to me, and we're going down. And he said, yes, we are. He said, but I can assure you that we won't crash. And he was right, we didn't. He was able to glide the plane in a clearing. It was a glen, a bit of a wooded glen, but there was a clearing in the area. And we got out. And then something happened that scared me, and I remember it to this day. A grizzly bear, and I'm telling you right now, Phil, at least 2,200 pounds, 12 feet high.
And on its hind legs?
Yes. Came out of the forest, and Bill and I screamed and ran. We must have run miles. Miles. And
you screamed and ran?
Wait, is there something wrong with that? Does that make me some kind of a fairy?
No, I didn't say that, but you screamed and you ran for miles? Is that what you said?
Yes, that's what I said. Can I say this again? It was a 12-foot-high grizzly bear. We screamed and ran. We didn't scream like women. Is that what you're saying? You think we did that?
Well, when you tell me that you screamed and ran...
Well, no, we didn't do that, but it was 12 feet high. To this day, they say it's a record. The people that I talked to.
Well, you didn't bring the bear back, though, huh?
No, Phil, I didn't bring the bear back.
Well, then how do they know You know,
because I told them, that's how they know. And they said to me, I can assure you, that's a record. I said, thank you. I don't know. We ran for miles and hid in the thicket for about a day until we made our way back to the plane. We got back to the plane. The seats were torn out. The electrical was all pulled out. The plane itself, it looked as if it had been just picked apart for parts.
Was there food eaten?
No. That was the funny thing about it. This bear, it was almost as if the bear was looking for parts to repair a plane of his own. I know it sounds crazy, but...
There was no food taken. There was just...
Yeah, there was just electrical removed. There was a whole section of the engine was gone. One of the tires had been removed. And
well, obviously, that wasn't a bear.
Well, who do you think it was? It was only a bear.
Well, it would have had to have been a human being taking a tire off of the aircraft.
No, there were no humans within miles. The bear came out of the forest, and I'm telling...
Well, are you telling me the bear unscrewed the tire?
No, it ripped it. It looked to me like it ripped it off. Or ripped it, tore it out, I don't know.
And all right, thanks a lot. Art Griego here on the Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back, 877-876-PHIL.
The seats were torn out.
They were.
Phil Hendry.
Had to reupholster.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Well, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on what is this, bud? This is Tuesday night. And we are here till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot, so they won't. We, by the way, speaking of our website, which we weren't speaking of, but we are now, we have some things in the works for the coming next couple of months that are going to be very exciting. We are going to finally address and do it in such a way as to have it be the quality kind of thing that we deliver. We're going to finally address once and for all making our video casts on demand available on your iPhone,
on your cornpone.
Yes, on your cornpone and on your iPhone, on your, what am I want to say, iPhone?
You say an iPad.
Yeah, iPad, iPhone, and iSister. So that will be a beautiful thing, so that when, you know, you're looking to view our video cast on demand, you can do that by on your iPhone, on your iPad, and so forth. Now, we're also going to be introducing something else that I can't give it away right now, but it is going to be, let me put it to you this way, we're going to be streaming some shows, some archive shows, some classic shows, and we'll tell you how we're going to do that and how they will be available to you and so on and so forth. So there's a couple of little things that are in the offing that we'd like you to be aware of as we roll out more and different changes on our website. We've never been and never will be a radio show that wants to just run out there and get apps. We don't believe that apps necessarily are the answer. We think there's a lot of really cheesy and crappy app companies. A lot of the apps themselves don't do what they say they'll do. We don't just run out and create mobile sites. Some of the mobile sites are atrocious. I don't know if you've been to them. I mean, I have, and I'd rather go back to the regular site than to try to use these terrible mobile sites. So we want to do things the right way, and that's what we're going to do. So head over to our website, philhendryshow.com, get a backstage pass, avail yourself of the largest archive of radio shows ever in the history of the planet Earth, and get ready for the coming year, 2012. All right, we're going to bring on the line now Pastor William Renick with us as we talk every year. And by the way, coming up on Friday night at midnight, Phil Hendry's Christmas Carol. That's right, a Phil Hendry Christmas Carol, our third annual Phil Hendry Christmas Carol, will be on the line, or will be on the air at midnight Pacific time, Friday night. So, Pastor Renick, I think you've got a part in that, don't you?
I certainly hope so, Phil. I know that I've been a part of that, a couple of the broadcasts you've done, and it's been very fun.
All right, so we're going to do that on Friday night, just so you got the heads up.
I'm going to be ready for that.
All right. We like to talk with you around Christmas time, Pastor Renick, about your seasonal message, what you're talking to your congregation about, what your homilies or your sermons may be about, what people are talking about, what your concerns are, what your celebration, your feelings are about the celebration, and so forth. Tell me what's on your mind this year and what you are sharing with people this coming Christmas.
Well, Phil, I'm very much mindful of the young people we've got in our congregation. We've got a great many young members of our congregation, children. A great many young people are not yet of junior high, you know, middle school age and so forth. I've always felt that the most important message around Christmas time for them is that they never lose sight of what the day is about. And I worry, especially the small children, when we take them on a, you know, Saturday or Sunday or sometime during a week, we take them down to the shopping mall, you know, and we take them to see Santa Claus. Santa Claus is a tradition that we have in our society and other societies. We take the children to see Santa Claus. We don't take them to see Pastor Rennick. We don't take them necessarily to see Jesus. You know, we don't take them necessarily to see any of the people that are real, the very real forces in their life. We take them to see Santa Claus. See? Now, that's the parents that are doing that. So when you ask me what have I got to, what am I thinking of, what am I going to share on Christmas Day with the congregation that's going to come to Joyful Union and celebrate the most blessed day in Christianity, and that is the birth of Jesus Christ. I'm going to say to a lot of the people there, I'm going to say, it's that when you could have taken them to come see Pastor Rennick, could have taken them to come see Jesus, you took them to see Santa Claus. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about taking that child to see Santa Claus when you could have taken that child to see me?
What do you mean, take them to see you?
I'm talking about bring them on to see me to our Bible school. Bring them on to talk to me about the lesson of Christmas. Any number of different things we do. Bring them on to talk to me about just how the schoolwork's going. How to talk to Pastor Rennick, because I am the spiritual shepherd of Joyful Union Congregation. I'm a living and breathing representation of Jesus Christ. I'm not Jesus. I'm simply carrying the word of Jesus. But I can tell you that for that child's spiritual upbringing, I'm way more important to talk to than Santa Claus. And yet the parents take them to see Santa Claus. So on Christmas Day, you expect me to stand there and give some very positive homily about how this is the day that Jesus was born. Well, yeah, it was the day that Jesus was born. But I want to look at those parents on Christmas Day and say, here we are on Christmas Day, the day Jesus was born, and all that chance you had to take the children to see Jesus, you took them to see Santa Claus.
Well,
what does that make them feel like?
Well,
what does it make them feel like is what I'm going to ask. What does it make you feel like? How does that make you feel if you took them to see Santa Claus instead of taking them over to see Pastor William Rennick or any other spiritual, iconic, or otherwise individual or figure or symbol that had real meaning in their life and are not a figment of somebody's imagination? See, so the message, Phil, is very important. Because what we're doing, and we're doing it, we're making Santa Claus into some kind of a god for the little kid. You know, Santa Claus, I understand he's a lot of fun, but he's a god.
What do you mean?
I mean, he's a god. I mean, he has godlike powers. If you think about Santa Claus, he has godlike powers. He can grant wishes. He can do all of these very supernatural things, fly around the world and all of this nonsense we talk about. But we give Santa Claus every power that God has. We have given Santa Claus every power that God the Son has. We have given Santa Claus every...
No, hold on. I gotta interrupt you here, Pastor. What do you mean we've given Santa Claus every power that God has?
What power does God have that Santa Claus don't have?
He created life. He created the earth.
Santa Claus created everything he wants. Santa Claus create everything he wants. We let Santa Claus, we let the children believe that Santa Claus can create life. Life!
Where do we ever let the children think that?
If a child sits down at Santa Claus and says this, Santa, I would like to have a baby brother for Christmas. What do you think Santa Claus says?
Well...
What do you think he says? He said, well, you know what, Santa Claus, I'm going to think about that. He didn't say, no, I can't do it. So, in other words, Phil, I'm not trying to be silly. I'm being very, very clear, and I think I'm being very literal. We give Santa Claus the power to create life. Now, other than God having that power, and that's who has the power, I was taught. The only other man that ever had the power to do that was in the I don't know, you call it a comic book and all a scary book, was that Dr. Frankenstein. He created life, but he created a monster. We always say, when mankind is involved in the creation of life, nothing but a monstrosity created. But now we got Santa Claus. And he can do anything God does. He can go anywhere God goes. He can fly. He can be invisible. All it. We give him the power to transmutate. So what we've done is we made Santa Claus into like a child God. A God for the children. And Jesus is cut out of the mix. I'm cut out of the mix. And the first thing a child should want to talk to me, and then talk to Jesus. But I'm the first, you know, other than Santa Claus, I would be the first.
What kind of kick is it for a little kid to talk to a preacher? You know,
if the parents are teaching that child properly, it could be a thrill and a half to talk to me about the Bible story, come to the Sunday school and what have you, and all that. You know. I don't know. I mean, we'll definitely make it fun. But you don't even give me a chance to do that. All you do is you say, yeah, Pastor Renick, that's fine. God's fine. Let's go on down and see Santa Claus because he's like God. That's what we say. Be like God.
All right, Pastor William Renick is, well, that's a challenging homily, I'll tell you that. Pastor William Renick is with us, and this Christmas Day, the homily all about how Santa Claus has been imbued with the powers of God by us parents, and that the kids are going to believe in Santa as a sort of God. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-7445, and we'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show here, and on the line with me is Pastor William Renick from Joyful Union Congregation in Bellflower, California, as we're talking about what the homily for Christmas might be about. What is the Christmas message? You kind of throw in a little bit of a curveball here, Pastor, when you say that you're going to be talking about how, well, you know, Santa Claus is sort of subverting everything.
Well, I don't know why that's a curveball, because let me tell you why, Phil. You know, I know that we want to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. That is what Christmas Day is all about. But Santa Claus has been thrown into the mix by the parents. I'm not blaming the children. The parents, and you know that Santa Claus now charges $20 for a picture. You know that Santa Claus now, he will not allow a cell phone picture. You know that Santa Claus now is a power unto himself. Every nickel that Santa Claus makes... And I'm not saying that what we're all about is money. But, you know, we need money to keep our church going. We need money to keep the work of God going. But the people are not donating the money to keep Jesus going. They're donating the money to keep Santa Claus going. Now, that there's something wrong there. So those people that was to take the child of Santa Claus, they come to church on Christmas. And I see them out there and say, how many of you people came here and gave some money to Joyful Union? How many of you was out dropping money in Santa Claus's bucket? paying to get a picture taken of Santa Claus, you pay to get a picture taken of me? Which I'm not saying, you know, I'm any great, I'm not saying I'm the superstar or nothing, but, you know, your preacher and the man that runs your church at least is as important as Santa Claus. And yet I don't see anybody ask to get their picture taken with me. And,
well, okay, but I mean, it's not quite the same thing, is it?
What do you mean it's not quite the same thing? What does that mean? Nobody's asked to get their picture taken with me. No, why would Santa Claus be better?
And well, okay, I guess you're right. You're not charging $20.
Well, if Santa Claus charging $20 to get a picture taken with Santa Claus, and nobody wants to lay that $20 on me or on my church, that is hypocrisy of the highest order. There's something wrong with people. So I'm going to tell them. I'm going to lay it out to them, and I'll tell you something. Christmas Day, when you come to church, yes, we're going to celebrate the birth of Jesus, but there's going to be a little bit of a sting in it this year. I'm going to say, let's be joyful and let's be happy, but I'm going to snap a towel, if you know what I'm saying. You know, I'm going to wrap a towel up. I'm going to wind a towel up and do a little towel snap. Because he talked about that Jerry Sandusky, who is a pervert and a sex. He's a filthy man, but he did towel snap. You know what that is?
Yeah, I know what it is. I think it's a very terrible. I don't like you comparing. And
well, no, I'm not comparing. I'm saying that when you come to church on Sunday, I've got a few things I'm going to say. And it ain't going to feel good for a lot of these people.
All right, Pastor William Renick with us. 877-876-PHIL is the number. And let's go over to Jeremy. Jeremy, you're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Pastor William Renick. Go ahead, please.
Hey, man. How you guys doing?
Good.
I was just calling. And to be fair, it just sounds like this pastor is just jealous. I mean, Santa is not. He's not real. He's a mythological
exactly.
Kind of creation. And
exactly.
For you to say, oh, exactly. People should want to pay money to get their picture taken with you, you're a pastor. Like, your call is to serve, and it's not to...
Let me ask you a question. Why would you give your money to a man that doesn't exist?
Okay, first off, who charges money to go to Santa? Go to any mall in freaking any America.
I'm telling you right now that Santa Claus and some of the malls charge $20 to get your picture taken with him, and he's making that money. People are paying that money.
Okay. Who are you to tell me what to spend my money on?
I'm just asking you a question. I'm asking you, why would you pay a mythological figure? That's what you call him, so why would you pay him money, a man that doesn't exist?
Because it's a you're talking about kids. It's a child. And the Jesus, I mean, he preaches more, let the children come to me. He's talking about children. I mean,
he didn't talk about paying. He didn't say pay me. He didn't say give me the money, did he? You're willing to give him money over that money.
There's like that money Santas that are actually making money. They're just sitting.
No, it doesn't make any difference. Now you see, what you're doing is you're rationalizing. See. You're rationalizing. You know, you give your money to Santa Claus. You give your money to Santa Claus, which is not very intelligent, and you're not giving it to me.
I don't need to give it to you. Who are you to take my money?
Because I'm a Christian preacher.
Why the hell would I give money to you?
I'm a Christian preacher. I'm not some made-up ferryman that you want to give your money to.
I mean, that's kind of an arbitrary distinction. I don't really see because you're a preacher, I'm supposed to give you $20
yes.
and have my...
Because I'm preaching the word of Jesus Christ. I'm preaching the word of Jesus Christ, and
okay,
Santa Claus
really
don't even exist. Hold on for a minute.
Hear me out. I don't remember one verse where Jesus says, give me $20 to get your picture taken with me. It doesn't matter if someone else is charging $20.
Yes, he said, no, I didn't say that. I said, tithe 10%. He says, tithe 10% for the church. Tithe 10% to the church. That's what Jesus does say. He says tithe 10%. Now,
yeah, it has nothing to do with
money. You giving money
to the church,
man,
not to a specific
you giving money.
Person.
You give well. It's the same difference.
Okay,
you
so if I tithe 10%, I'm
you giving money. You know what?
Hold on, you guys are. Yeah, hold on. Wait, Jeremy, your phone is like horrible. And preacher, you're not letting anybody get said anything. Okay.
Yeah, this guy wants to give $20 to a made up guy, and he's trying to tell me he's making sense.
All right, well, let the man talk. Go ahead,
okay.
Jeremy.
Let me first say, I don't even have kids, so I've never.
Well, what the hell are you talking about?
Let him finish.
Let me finish, man. You freaking derelict.
I don't even have no kids. You have no kids? What the?
No.
Well, you let him.
Let me finish. It doesn't matter. I still have an opinion. I'm saying.
Well, yeah, everybody got an opinion.
I've never seen anyone, like, I've literally never seen a Santa that charges $20 to get their picture taken. Furthermore,
well, let's just assume that it went. Now, hold on, Jeremy. Let's just assume that that does exist because it does exist. Okay, so let's not quarrel about whether it happens. Hold on, will you? For crying out loud, you know, part of this is I got to run this show because with you guys talking over each other, the audience does it. They don't. They're not entertained by it. It doesn't sound like anything other than a lot of noise. So let's just hold. You got to stop. You got to stop talking, man, or I got to hang up on you. Stop. Hold on. I'm saying. Let's just, for the sake of argument, say, yes, Santa Claus does charge $20 because he does.
That's what I'm trying to tell a guy.
Okay, now go ahead.
Okay. Let's just say he does. I can spend $20 on anything. That doesn't negate the fact that I might also be tithing to my church. And so, okay, maybe my child, he likes Santa. I like the idea of him enjoying Christmas. Christmas being involved with Santa, but it's very clear if I were to ever have kids, sure, I want them to believe in Santa. It's fun. It's fun for them to think that there's a fat guy bringing presents.
That's blasphemy.
But that doesn't also mean that I'm not 100% preaching to them that Jesus is the reason for the season. Christmas is not about Santa. It's about Jesus. Santa's the one that gives them presents.
Exactly.
Obviously, when you're talking to a 7-year-old kid, he's going to be a little more enthused with whoever's bringing them presents than some preacher in California that I've never heard of.
Why don't
potential kids don't want their picture taken with them?
That's only because you bad-mouthing me to your kids. You're bad-mouthing me to your kids. You're running me down. You should tell the kids.
I'm not going to talk about you to my kids because they don't give a rat's ass about you. I don't care.
Yes, they will if you tell them that I'm a good. If you tell them I'm better than Santa Claus, they will give a rat's ass. That's the whole point I'm trying to make. And everything about.
Oh, God. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Who's more important, Phil Pastor Renick or Santa?
I am.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, piss me off, you know.
Well, hold on, why?
Because I said, see, that's the kind of thing. If a man wants to give money to Santa Claus, I understand that. You can give money to Santa Claus. At least admit that what you're doing, you're giving money to Santa Claus, who is a made-up guy. It never exists. Santa Claus don't exist, and he ain't never going to exist. But you're giving him money because, why? Because it makes, now you ain't going to give any money to Jesus. Now you can't hide from that. If you say that Jesus is why there's Christmas, and you ain't giving me money, and
whoa, hold on, giving you money or Jesus money?
Giving money to Jesus is what I mean. But you're giving the money to the church, the money to the church that is the money to Jesus. It comes to me as the pastor of the church, so that I can oversee what is done with that money. So I'm using a little bit of shorthand too when I say either giving money to Santa Claus or giving money to me. I mean Jesus. When I say me, I mean Jesus. I'm not saying I'm Jesus. I'm using that as short, because especially if you're talking to a child and you say to that child, do you want to go see Santa Claus or do you want to go see Pastor Renick? And the kid's going to say Santa Claus because the kid doesn't love Jesus.
And no, but you said Pastor Renick.
I said Pastor Renick because it's what I'm talking about, Jesus. You listen to what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I'm listening to what you're saying, but I think if you say to a child, do you want to go see Santa Claus today, or do you want to go see Pastor Renick?
The child, if you teach that child properly, and that's the other thing, Phil, most of these parents are not teaching their children the proper religious principles and religious teaching. I wouldn't hire some of these parents to teach. I wouldn't hire some of these parents to teach a child how to wipe themselves. You know, I'm sorry, but I just wouldn't. These parents, they wouldn't be able to potty train a kitty cat the way they're doing it. So I'd have to say to them, do you want to go see Jesus, meaning me, or do you want to go see...
See, when you say, do you want to go see Jesus, meaning me, I think it puts some people off.
Why?
Because they think you're talking about yourself as Jesus.
I just got done explaining. God. I just got done explaining.
All right, I understand what you mean by that, is that you are just simply...
I'm like collecting the money for Jesus. The same way you got some woman dressed up like a what do you want to call her, elf? She's getting money for Santa Claus. If you know, that's the same. What, do you put down the lady dressed as an elf? No, what are you putting me down?
But I ain't calling her Santa.
She's getting the money for Santa Claus, though.
All right, okay, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL is our number. I'm going to go over to Dustin here. Dustin, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Pastor Rennick. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Pastor, listen, I agree with you. You know, in
Thank
the fact
you.
That we should
Thank
definitely,
you.
Definitely teach our children, if we claim to be Christian, then
exactly.
It is not our duty as parents to teach our children about the real meaning of Christmas.
That's exactly my point. That's exactly my point.
I completely agree with you on that. And, as, you know,
Thank you.
I have to say, however, you know, as you said, Santa is absolutely a mythological creature of our society. And,
exactly.
You know, you kind of have to give that as a given, and you really kind of do, because how can you reach out as a Christian to those that are not Christians if you can't at least accept and understand?
I totally accept.
How they
no, but what I'm saying, brother, is this. Brother, what I'm saying is this. I'm saying that Santa Claus is like God. We gave Santa Claus God power. Santa Claus created life. Santa Claus can take away life. You know,
I mean,
that's,
you know,
to me, that's...
You really got the host on this. I mean, on that one, you really got him just for a second because, you know, as far as it goes, I was disagreeing with you when you commented earlier about, in my mind, I was disagreeing in when you said we give Santa Claus the power of God to create life, you know, because that
That's
is
exactly right.
That is essentially God's founding power in our minds as far as we can accept it and comprehend.
And we give it to Santa Claus. See, now Santa Claus can do it too.
You know, no. We give it in a sort of a variable sort of way. We give it in a variable sort of way.
I think the blasphemy here, but the blasphemy here is that the blasphemy here is that we're giving this man a right to hold on for a minute there, now, son. The blasphemy here, the blasphemy is that we give Santa Claus the ability to create life, but then when it comes time to give somebody some money, I don't get any. Santa Claus does.
Well, I mean, not to be funny, but he creates life.
I'll be honest with you on that. This is my personal take. No, as far as does with money, yes, we should tithe to what we believe in to be the church
exactly.
And our own beliefs. However, if you as a pastor, if you as a pastor can't go out and garden and provide for your own self, with or without, do like Jesus did. Jesus went without eating. Jesus went with eating, but he provided for himself in human ways. So be like Jesus and provide for yourself in human ways.
Where are you reading that?
Without the tithing. Without. Where did I read that? When Jesus walked down the road to Damascus, he was starving.
Yeah.
When Jesus went to the wilderness, Jesus was starving.
Damascus? Jesus wasn't going to Damascus. You talk about Paul went to Damascus. He didn't go to Madness?
He went on the road, and he said to
on the road.
Branch,
on the road.
The road, the path, the road to Damascus. He went on it with his disciples, and while he was on the path, he came across an olive branch. And the olive
and there you go.
Was
exactly. So,
and he
don't try to blow the man off, Mr. Henry, just because you don't...
I'm not blowing him off. I'm listening to what the gentleman's saying, and I do have to move along. I appreciate very much your call, sir.
Yes, absolutely.
Wait. Hold on. I just want this man, you're a good man, Dustin. I appreciate that very much, sir.
Thanks.
You're a good man. And when people realize what you're saying is true, that Santa Claus is becoming almost godlike, we're going to have a problem. We're going to have a problem with our children because the children are going to say, I worship at the altar of the golden, I worship at a golden Santa Claus.
The material.
Just like the golden calf. Yeah, the material. And I worship at the altar of this golden, you know, this fat, like that fat Buddha they got. And the children will never come to me, not meaning me, but Jesus. But
you know, every time you say me, that's the thing that's
really
putting me off.
What do you mean to work on what?
Work
I'm saying
you cannot for you cannot be I'm sorry, and I don't mean to be rude, but you cannot
no, that's all right.
say that you're a man of God if you cannot completely disassociate yourself from God in the essence that you are not yourself, you are a vessel for God.
Yes.
You don't count. You are not
exactly.
there. If God says
exactly.
to you, you need to starve for 6 months, and God will allow you to do it, and God will provide for you when you have to do that, if God calls upon you to do that. 6 months,
ain't it true
and it has been proven
yeah.
in science
yeah.
that human body
yeah.
can last at least 4 months without
yeah.
food.
Yeah, well, look, isn't that true?
Well, so you gotta have to
I gotta, I'm saying that God is God, you know, and I ain't God, but I'm God when he ain't around, is what I'm saying. And I don't mean that.
God is always around.
You're God when he ain't around. Wow. All right, I got to Dustin, thanks so much, buddy. Nice call. I appreciate it, sir, very much. 877-876-PHIL.
No, I didn't say, you misunderstood me.
No, I didn't misunderstand you. I just heard what you said. I'm God when God ain't around.
No, I didn't. Well, I didn't mean that. What I meant to say was, so the man said to me, I got to disassociate myself from God. All I'm trying to say, the only message I'm trying to get out, what I'm trying to say to everybody listening tonight, and I wish to God people would listen to me. I'm not trying to say that Pastor William Rennick is God. I'm trying to say that Jesus is God. Santa Claus ain't it. Now, we got millions of little tiny children running around. And if we don't watch ourselves, you're going to have a generation of these little tiny kids making Santa Claus like a big, you know, where they have if you ever seen that Twilight Zone where they had a man? You ever seen the Twilight Zone, a man? They made a big statue of the man?
The little tiny people.
That, right. The little I'm telling you, we have a generation of these little itsy-bitsy kids saying that Santa Claus is God Almighty. And that they throw themselves at the feet of Santa. Man, I tell you, we're in trouble if that happens. We're in trouble. And
all right, hold on, Pastor William Rennick with us here. As I think what you're saying, Pastor, I understand, is Santa Claus is almost being deified, if I get him right. And the parents are really the ones that hold the reins on all of that, whether they are allowing the kids to deify Santa or whether they're actually telling the kids, hey, he's a fun, made-up guy. Or, you know, the little ones, you don't tell them he's made up. And then they get older and I don't know. But Pastor William Rennick is with us saying that Christmas Day, he's going to let everybody have it for turning Santa Claus into the deity and forgetting about Jesus, meaning him, Pastor Rennick. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back after this.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
World-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. On the line with us, Pastor William Rennick from the Joyful Union Congregation in Bellflower, California, as we finish out this hour talking about Santa Claus, of all things. And I suppose every year it's an important discussion. We have a talk with you every Christmas, Pastor, about something. And this year it is Santa Claus.
And you know, Phil, every year when I'm talking to you about Christmas, and we always, sooner or later, come around to Santa Claus. And I've got to tell you, as much as I love children, and as much as I love, and I understand that Jesus loved children too, every time the discussion comes around to Santa Claus, it's the same sort of pain that I feel. It's a pain. And the pain is the pain of knowing that Santa Claus is once again getting over, you know. And once again, he's rolling everybody out there. And
what if he's rolling everybody?
Well, you know, he's getting over Santa Claus. Every year, Santa Claus makes a scene. And I'm here. And I got, as the saying goes, I got a pocket full of sand. You know, I'm a mouth full of cotton candy. I can't make a dollar. Now, I died on the cross. I didn't die on the cross. Jesus died on the cross. But what I'm saying is, I represent Jesus. And
you realize you almost said I died on the cross?
No, I did. I caught myself. What I'm saying is, as a representative of Jesus, I didn't die on the cross. Jesus died on the cross. I am not Jesus, all right?
Let me get to some phone calls here, okay?
No, but I want to, I'm trying to tell you that when I didn't preach, but when Jesus preached, you know, it was about being the Son of God, and Santa Claus is getting nothing but, I mean, I'll tell you, Santa Claus gets all the cheese, he gets all the love.
All right, let me just take a phone call here. 877-876-PHIL is the number. Let me go over to Lydia on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Lydia. You're on with Pastor William Rennick.
Yes, this is all about money, isn't it? It's
no,
really
ma'am.
Not
no.
about Santa Claus. It's all about money.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. It's
yes,
about
it is.
What it is about love. The love of Jesus, the love of me. Not the love of me, but the love
no,
of Jesus.
No, you're not Jesus, sir. You're not Jesus.
I know.
You need help. You need serious help. You need serious conviction because you are not Jesus. And
I know.
The money does not go to you. The money goes to the church. It goes to the not to you.
And the church is the body of Jesus.
For electricity? No. It goes to the church to pay the water, for the bill. It does not go to you. So, to me, it's all about money.
For the youth center.
You know, I'm kind of sick and tired of you kind of people that go and you bash the Christians because you're not one. Being a Christian,
I beg your pardon. I happen to be a Christian preacher at Joyful Union Pentecostal.
And you know what? So I've been listening to the radio, and you said, I don't know how
you know something.
You said God's name in vain. And
no,
and
I did not.
Oh, yes, I have heard.
Oh, I know. So I didn't. Wait, you tell me what did I say? Tell me exactly what I said. Don't lie. Don't lie. It's a sin to lie. It's a. You know what lying is?
You're not God. You are not
you lied.
Jesus, and you are not God.
Well, Pastor,
so
you've been saying, Pastor.
Money. It is not.
You.
It is
hold
not
on. You've been saying, Pastor. Pastor, you've been saying Jesus is me and.
No, this lady said that I took the Lord's name in vain, and she can't say when because she's making it up. That's why. She's lying. And that's against the Bible too.
Oh, honey, you're lying.
Lydia, turn your radio down. Lydia, turn your radio down too.
Yeah, she don't even know to turn her radio down. I know enough to turn my radio down.
Okay, Lydia, what was your comment?
I said he's lying is one of the Ten Commandments, and he's lying himself. He's lying.
You said I took
that. By saying that he's God, and then he changes his mind that it's him, he's not God. I've been listening to this for a long while now, and you know I'm very angry because I too was brought up Pentecostal, and I know I know that all it is with you is about money. It's not about Santa Claus. All these kids think about they say they believe in Santa Claus, but you know what? You think us parents don't tell them that Jesus is the reason for the season, that Jesus was born?
I think a lot of parents do not say that. That's why I'm going to get. That's why I'm going to. I'm reading the Riot Act on them. I'm reading the Riot Act on them on December 25.
Like I said, the money does not go to you. It's supposed to go to the church.
They haven't given the money to me. They gave it to Santa Claus. Well, then, how come Santa Claus gets all the money?
You don't need the money. You don't need the money.
You rather give money to Santa. Why don't I get it?
And for the water and for things for the church, not for.
So you'd let Jesus starve. You'd let Jesus starve. I hope you can sleep at night.
I know. No, I know I can sleep at night.
You're going to let Jesus starve. You're going to let Jesus go hungry. You're
going to
let Jesus go.
Do you make money off of your congregation?
What do you mean, do I work? Do you? I work harder than Santa Claus. I work harder than Santa Claus. I work harder than Santa Claus. Santa Claus don't even exist. He make more money than me. Think of that.
I'm working right now. Do you work?
No, you're not. You're on the phone talking to me. You ain't working.
Oh, yes, I am. I drive. For a living, I drive. I'm a professional driver. But you know what?
You're going to get in an automobile accident. You're going to get an accident talking on the phone.
You know what?
You're driving a cab. You're going to get in a crash. There you are. You're going blah, 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 blah.
All right, I can't hear.
You know
now, Lydia, you know.
Well, what she's saying is this, Phil. I don't get the money. I'm not Jesus. But if I was Jesus, I should have the money. Not Santa Claus, but she thinks Santa Claus ought to have it. Santa Claus make more money than anybody, and Santa Claus don't even exist. She can't make sense out of that.
Do you know what? Santa Claus doesn't exist, but don't take that dream away from the kids. They're just kids. As they get older, then they realize that Santa Claus does not exist.
Oh, yeah, sure. Then they go out and kill people. They find out Santa Claus doesn't exist.
Now they're going to go out and kill people.
They want to go out and kill puppies.
I see, and I've been listening to you, sir, all it is about money. That's all it is. It's not about visa. It's not
you're
about
driving that car tonight.
It's about money.
You're driving that car. What's that about? What's driving that car about? Money.
Okay, I'm making
yeah.
Money.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
I'm
right.
My bills. And,
but you're a pre-
and so do I. And Santa Claus is taking food out of Jesus's mouth. I mean, my mouth. I mean, Jesus's mouth.
You are not Jesus, sir. You know what? You're not Jesus.
In a,
you
in
need
a
to
manner
read the
of speaking,
Bible
I
more.
Am.
You're not Jesus.
I do. I know I'm not, but I am.
Oh, you know,
as far as
I
you're
know,
concerned.
I feel so
oh, boy.
Sorry. I feel
boy,
so
oh, boy. That is not
so
true.
No, Phil, I said as far as she's concerned, I'm Jesus. I'm not really.
No, not as far as
you're
she's concerned.
Jesus. I never said you were Jesus. You're not.
But I might as well be. I'm as close to Jesus
no,
you're going to get.
You're a blasphemer is what you are. You are a blasphemer. That's what
a brown shirt.
People like you are a blasphemer.
Is that, I don't know what she said.
Blasphemer. You know what a blas.
Oh, well.
You should know a blasphemer.
What are you going to do?
You're a pastor, aren't you?
Well, what are you going to do?
All right. Thank you, Lydia. Drive carefully, though.
You're welcome.
Yeah, because
right.
We do want you to
have
drive.
A
all
nice
right. Thank you very much. You too. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to another phone call. We've got Mitchell on the line. Mitchell, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Pastor William Rennick.
Yeah, I just want to give a quick history lesson. There was a St. Nicholas that gave to the poor, and that's what Santa Claus is based off of. And it's about the spirit of giving during this time of season, as well as about the birth of Jesus Christ. And to sit there and say that Santa Claus doesn't exist, well, the spirit that he perceived does exist and it still maintains to this day. Now, people are giving to the church and giving $20 to Santa Claus for a picture. Well, there's no problem in that because you're still getting your 10% tithe from them for the church. So I don't know what your beef is.
My beef is this. When you give $10 to Manna, when you give $10 to Caesar, when you give $10, because that's what you're doing. You're giving $10 to a fatted golden calf. That's what you're doing. Now let me ask you something. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai, when Moses come down from Mount Sinai, he didn't say, "Thou shalt worship only God," and oh yeah, you can keep your golden calf. He didn't say that.
Worshiping Santa Claus. Nobody's having.
Are you my man? I think you need to open your eyes. You got the little tiny kid. They're worshiping Santa Claus. They're worshiping Santa Claus. They're burning incense. They might as well burn incense to him.
How are they worshiping Santa Claus?
They gave him God. They gave him godlike powers. I just got done telling you. He can fly. He's invisible.
It was just a fable made up.
Can he fly?
Him being able to give gifts.
Can he fly? He can fly, can he?
No, he can't. No, he can't fly. He has a quote-unquote magical sleigh that with flying reindeer. Santa Claus does not fly.
Lions, you know, you lie. In the service of Santa Claus, you serve as Satan.
Henry.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. There we go. We're continuing into outer space. If you're looking to us, looking at us, and you're looking to us, almost as if we're an inspiration, you know.
For guidance.
Yes, for guidance. We're on Phil TV and HD right now, and you see behind me, we're leaving the Earth. That is a, we are jettisoning from the Earth, and we're heading out into space. See, there's the...
Yeah, we're almost to the moon.
And now we're on to some other clip. So we want to thank Amanda Green for creating many of the groovy psychedelic things. Okay, don't want to get too much into that kind of conversation because you never know who's listening. Now, it's nice to be with you here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. It is our news and information hour. Now, what the hell happened to the story I just printed up? Oh, I haven't printed it. There's a couple of really bizarre, fascinating, nonetheless necessary stories in the news to be read. I like how I got through that. And we're going to do that. And we won't do them in any particular order other than what strikes my fancy. See, here's the first thing that I see that really bothers me. And I was mentioning this to Dan Northcraft, our technical director, during the break. And I said, this story about that little Amish girl that was killed, apparently it was some jackass cleaning his muzzle-loading rifle a mile away. Now listen to this. A man cleaning his muzzle-loading rifle shot the gun into the air. He shot the gun into the air, accidentally killing a 15-year-old Amish girl driving a horse-drawn buggy more than a mile away. Accidentally killing her, yes. Did he intentionally shoot it into the air? Yes. Because he's a dumbass. See, when you shoot a gun into the air, what do you think happens?
Well, everybody does that.
I don't give a damn if everybody does that. When you shoot a gun into the air...
The bullet goes up in the air.
Yes, the bullet goes up in the air. Thank you very much, Robert. Now, what do you think that bullet does?
I thought it went, like...
into outer space? Is that what you think, bud?
Well, yeah, sort of. I mean... How do you think of a bullet going into outer space, man? It's not going supersonic.
Well, however fast it's going, bud, it doesn't make it into outer space. The gravity of the Earth eventually catches up to that bullet. And then the bullet turns around and it falls. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's falling and falling and falling and falling, and it has to come down and hit the Earth at some point. And sometimes it doesn't hit the Earth first, it hits someone's head. So anybody that goes out and shoots like those stupid asses we see in the Middle East, no offense, but that's just flat dumb. And you can't, you know, I always love people who, every time something is a little off or whack about the rest of the world, there are a lot of people, there's a very significant portion of people who will come running into the fray to say, well, we're just as bad in this country. Why, just the other day, and they'll have some kind of trumped up thing that Americans do, right? I've never seen Americans en masse gather and start pumping shots into the air. As much as we like to fantasize about America being out of control, gun nuts, you know, gun nuts. My God, this place is the safest country in the world when I look at some of the news footage I see nightly. Guys with automatic weapons, bam, 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 shooting these things off into the air left and right. How many people are dying over there from that?
Yeah, well, they never say the guy got no bullet come down and put a guy's head open or nothing.
They're not going to say it. Some cat that dies over there from a gunshot, they just figure, what the hell, I don't know. You know, some guy shot a gun and we're in the middle of a war, who knows? You think it's going to make headlines over here? But this makes headlines, and this is, gun safety, folks. See, they're going to take the guns away, and I don't want them to take the guns away, but this is what they use. They use these stories, and when I say they, I mean the turds. I mean the International Turd Lobby. It's not just a local, it's not just an American lobby, it's the International Walking Turd Lobby. And these people go into the state and into the national legislatures all over the world, and they go in and try to cause all kinds of problems. They go in and just make general pains in the ass of themselves. Yes, the International Turd Lobby is here. What do you guys now? What do you guys want? We're going to get rid of guns, and we're going to do all kinds of things, you know. And the next thing you know, we got to deal with this. So let's just give ourselves a fighting chance, shall we? When we're cleaning our muzzle-loading rifle, whatever that is, that's fine. You know, I'm not, no offense. You know, do whatever you want to do there, Davy Crockett. But don't fire the thing into the air like you're out, I don't know what, you know, celebrating the taking of the fort. Because the bullet came down and killed this child. Her name was Rachel Yoder, 15-year-old kid, shot in the head Thursday night while traveling to her home in Wayne County. Little kid, she's a little Amish girl, and she's in her little buggy. God.
Man. Just like, you know, horse and buggy and everything?
Yes, and a horse and buggy. Just a little Amish person, you know, that's their thing. And we sort of, you know, they're kind of a national treasure, the Amish people. Yeah, I'm sure that there's, I always love it when I start talking about this. I generally will get a phone call or two from, you don't know the Amish like I do. I've done business with them. Boy, they're cutthroat. You know, there's always going to be one or two people that they're going to give me the whole lowdown on the Amish. You know, what a racket they're running and all this good stuff. It's like when the casinos started, you know. As soon as the Indian casinos, oh boy. You don't know about the Indians. I know about them. I worked with them. Oh yeah. Anyway, the horse continued to cart this girl after she was shot and she fell out of the buggy near her home. Holmes County Sheriff Timothy Zimmerly said her brother found her after he saw the horse walking in circles and he went to check. Authorities initially believed she'd fallen out of the buggy and hit her head until a hospital test revealed the gunshot wound. Hunter said his department traced a trail blood along the road for about 3/8 of a mile into Holmes County in an area of farms and rolling hills. Zimmerly said the gun cleaner's family came forward, and his neighbors reported hearing a shot at about the time the girl was wounded. Well, the family came forward, and the neighbors heard a shot about the time the girl was wounded. The man who fired the gun in the air about a mile and a half from where Yoder was shot, Zimmerly said, state investigators were checking the rifle for a ballistics match. In all probability, it looks like an accidental shooting. No charges have been filed. Yoder, I think there ought to be a manslaughter rap in that. I don't give a crap, you know?
Yeah, he didn't do it on purpose.
I don't give a damn if he didn't. You're firing a gun into the air. Anybody that owns a gun, anyone that claims to be knowledgeable about firearms, anyone claiming to be a worthy owner of a firearm, someone who claims to be a qualified owner of a firearm, ought to know better than to shoot a gun into the air. Unless they're saying the gun went off, and I very carefully read this story. I didn't see where the story says he accidentally shot the gun. It says he shot the gun into the air, comma, accidentally killing a 15-year-old Amish girl. Yes, the killing was accidental. That's what manslaughter is. By your negligent behavior, you didn't intend to kill anybody, but your negligent and derelict behavior caused the death of someone.
That what it says in the law?
I don't know what it says in the law. Sounds good to me, though, you know.
Yeah, it's about probably right.
How do you know, man? You don't know.
That sounds good to me.
Well, okay, but I mean, you're not like Perry Mitchell. Well, never mind, okay? Don't argue about it. Hunter said earlier there was no indication the shooting was related to a rash of beard-cutting attacks. Some other screwball group of Amish guys are cutting each other's beards off. Apparently that's a hate crime. Still, the mystery of the shooting in the wake of the beard-cutting attacks had left the Amish shaken and on pins and needles. Sheriff Zimmerly said he informed the Yoder family the shooting appeared to be accidental. Obviously, that makes them feel a lot better than if someone might have been targeting the Amish or if it was a random shooting murder, he said. Gun violence in Amish communities is rare, but not unheard of. You guys remember that story of the guy shooting 10 kids, killing 5 of them inside a one-bedroom schoolhouse 5 years ago in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania? The Amish were praised for their forgiveness after the shooting and reaching out to comfort the gunman's widow.
You kidding?
No, I ain't kidding. Better people than me, I'll tell you that, man.
Well, that's the whole thing, man. They're supposed to be better than you. They're all like Amish and stuff.
They're all like Amish and stuff, huh? You mean Christian?
Well, yeah.
Well, they are better than me, man. If they can reach out and, you know...
Reach out and touch someone.
Whatever. So there's the story on the Amish. That's a drag, man. You don't want to be firing guns into the air, and because the bullet does have to come down, bud. It doesn't go into outer space.
Well, now I know.
Yeah, now you know. That's great. Now you know. All right, 877-876. Phil, the number on the Phil Hendry Show. Actually, we got to stop giving a phone number up, man. We're going to take any more phone calls tonight. It is our news and information hour. I'm going to look for that trailer for the film that that I'm in called Last Call. Just any movie that I'm in, I want to talk at just unendingly about. No, I'm kidding. But I thought I'd let you know. It's called Last Call. The movie's out. The trailer's out. I'm going to look for it, and I'll show it on Phil TV in HD. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
About the Amish?
No, it ain't. About the Amish.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, welcome back here. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. What I'm trying to do here is show a... I was trying to show on our Phil TV and HD during the break a look at the Last Call trailer, the film The Last Call, which I have the scene in, and I got a email from the director. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about this. Just go to lastcallcomedy.com. No, but it says here, Phil, you did a great job. Too bad we had to hack you out because you suck. No, he said... I'm just kidding. He said... Your scene is well and intact. You did a great job. I also put your credit at the top of the second. Okay, great. Thank you, man. Now, I'm not in any of the trailers because my scene is a... Well, there's a reason. But we'll probably embed one of these on the website, one of the trailers for Last Call. And I got to look at this. Christopher Lloyd is in it. There's a great cast. The only guy that I saw the day that I was there was Dave Foley. He's a terrific guy. And but Tom Arnold is in it. Christopher Lloyd is in it. Dave Foley is in it. Tara Reid. Clint Howard. David DeLuise. Dixie something. So there you go.
Dixie something?
Yeah, I don't know. And Phil Hendry. Only they don't have my face there in the thing. Because I'm not one of the main actors. I'm secondary. All right, so it's called Last Call. Check it out, and we'll let you know when it's in movie theaters very, very soon. 877-876-PHIL, and I didn't get paid to say that. It's not Plugola, so don't worry about it. Did you hear about the guy that got nailed for Plugola?
Uh-uh.
Some cat in Miami got nailed down for Plugola, baby. Oh, yeah.
What's Plugola?
Plugola is when you're mentioning a business or mentioning some sort of a commercial interest on the air, and you're getting paid to say it, but you're not telling either the producer of your radio show or the distributor of your show or your audience. It's not being logged as a commercial announcement. In other words, it's under-the-table money, and that's illegal. So if you say, oh, you know, I'm in a movie called Last Call, you got to go see it, and I'm getting actually paid under the table for that, then that would be illegal.
Are you?
Yes, I am getting paid under the table, bud. Are you an idiot or something?
What do you think he just said, man? Well, no, I don't mean if you're illegal, but...
No, man! If I was getting paid to say that, I'd have to log it, and it would have to be legal. Yeah, that's right, bud. I'm getting paid under the table, and I'm about to go to prison for it. And you can get jailed for that kind of thing, so... I don't know why. You know what I'm saying? Why is that?
Well, I mean, what do you mean?
Well, why can't I? In other words, why is it illegal? For instance, why is it illegal to get paid to play a record? That's Plugola, too. That's payola, too. Okay?
Well, I don't know. That's when they made that law way back in the olden days.
Yeah, the olden days? Yeah, they did it in the 50s. They did it because it came to the attention of certain people, and it probably came to the attention of record companies more than any other people, that one record company said, how come that cat's getting his music played? It's because they're paying those guys a lot of money. We ain't paying. You know, it probably got down to this. Whoever's got deeper pockets are going to get their, he's going to get their music played. Well, to be honest with you, folks, it's kind of the way it is anyway, because the companies that get their music played are companies that can afford to promote the hell out of it. And those are deep pocket companies. Why do you suppose most of the artists you hear are on big labels? Most of the artists you hear on the radio are on big labels. They've got deep pockets. So anyway, you can't do that. It's illegal and like that. All right, so a cat, some cat in Miami, I forget his name, he does middays at one of the sports station in Miami. I don't want to make a mistake, but you guys in Miami know who I'm talking about. What happened was this. According to the story that I saw, the guy was doing plugs for some kind of betting service, some either online or otherwise, and he was doing these plugs on the air, doing these commercial announcements on the air, and it was to pay off a gambling debt that he had with that very company.
And he didn't tell nobody?
He didn't tell anybody. And you want to know how they found out? They found out because this knucklehead was getting faxes that he left in the fax machine.
Oh, man, so they found a fax.
They found the faxes. They found a fax that said, hey, dear so-and-so, yeah, nice plug, man, as you pay off your gambling debt to us. Something like that. So, anyway, he's been given some kind of a suspension without pay. That's brutal. And, of course, I don't know. Now, that the company has to deal with that. They've suspended him without pay. But I also think some kind of restitution has to be. They have to address this. Doesn't the DA have to say something about it? I don't know.
That's guessing me.
But it was, at one time, was pretty heavy. A pretty heavy problem, and they came to solve it by doing that. But I it's like the quiz show thing, and the point is made at the end of the film, and it's a great point. The guy says, "Wait a minute, whoa! So what if we gave him the answers? Why, I don't understand. What are you talking about?" Well, don't you realize that you're defrauding them? And he said, "It's entertainment." He said, "It's not like you when you say we're defrauding the public. All we're doing is creating a show." With a fake competition, And, you know, it's all for the entertainment of people. If this was some kind of a vital national interest, if it was a utility of some kind, or it was a, you know, national defense, or, but it's not. It's just a stupid show about answering questions properly. So why is it you guys have dragged our asses here to Washington? Well, it was a great point, but it was lost in the indignation of the Charles Van Doren thing, because the guy on quiz show was this well-known American, and people just couldn't stand the thought of this guy who was the son of a prominent American writer, and his mother was a prominent American poet, and they were a distinguished family, and blah, 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 and this guy is being given the answers to questions, and it was just an outrage and all this good stuff, so...
I don't know what you just anything you said. None of it.
That's why I said it, so I could just be, you know, just have you get off my back for 5 seconds. All right, here's something you'll understand, bud. Michelle Bachmann approached by gay rights activists claiming her kids are homosexuals.
Yay!
All right. Republican presidential candidate Representative Michelle Bachmann and her husband Marcus Bachmann. Are seen here in this photograph as they are waving to people. Oh, that's great. Michelle Bachmann has a problem with gay rights activists. The Republican presidential candidate was confronted in Iowa by an advocate who said it was likely that several of her foster kids were homosexuals. Homosexuals. The encounter comes just weeks after Bachmann, who's been outspoken in her fight against same-sex marriage. You know what? I can't read this. I'm sorry, but our printing machine... The encounter comes weeks after Bachmann, who's been outspoken in her fight against same-sex marriage, was approached by an 8-year-old boy who told her, "My mommy, Miss Bachmann, my mommy's gay, but she doesn't need firing or fixing." This latest incident at a pizza restaurant in Clarion, where she was accompanied by her husband Marcus, a woman identified by CNN as Kathy Schnell, approached the couple at the campaign event with a sign that said, "Gay-friendly Iowan." "I was wondering if you would sign my sign," she asked Bachmann on Sunday. "Gay-friendly Iowan," a smiling Bachmann asked before signing it. Schnell continued, "I wonder if you're aware that 10% of the population is gay, and if you have 28 children, then 2.8% of those kids are very likely gay." The Minnesota congresswoman and her husband have 5 biological children and have fostered 23 kids. Bachmann, who seemingly tried to ignore Schnell at first, eventually replied, "Well, that's according to the Kinsey report," she said, referring to Dr. Alfred Kinsey, who came up with a much-referred-to study that concluded approximately 10%, yada, yada. Her husband, who owns a clinic with his wife that has come under scrutiny for reportedly telling homosexual patients to pray away that gay in order to become straight, chimed in. "Your facts are wrong." He said...
"Yeah, I knew you were going to do that."
"All right, I'm sorry." He said, "Your facts are wrong. It's been a myth for many years." Marcus Bachmann made headlines last week when he laid out his socially conservative agenda should his wife be elected president, insisting he'd champion pro-heterosexual marriage, pro-family, and pro-life causes. "We're going to get this message across that marriage is between one man and one woman," he said, and then swished away. No, I'm kidding.
Now, why do you think he's gay?
Dude, it ain't just me saying that, okay? If it was just me saying that, I wouldn't say it. All right?
Well, why do you say he's gay?
Because there's a lot of gay people that think he's gay, and if you listen to the way the guy talks, never mind. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and of course online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. What is that, man? What are we looking at there? We are at present right now. I was looking for some of the audio, Bud, you were asking me. I'm not going to say the man's gay. I'm just telling you that the many people in the gay community think he is, that he's in the closet. That his fascination with social issues like gay marriage is the result of him trying really hard to stay buried in the closet there, and that what he has is in his mind, is just kind of a, you know, a little bit of a psychological problem that all guys have. See, I honestly think that a lot of these guys, first of all, I think really virulently homophobic men are closeted. I'm sorry, but I do. And by that, I you know, it doesn't necessarily mean Marcus Bachmann, but gay bashers, guys that beat up gay men, I don't think there's any question. Maybe that's a very, very broad generalization, but I'm sorry, you know, I'm going to go ahead and make it. You know, if you go so far as to go out and beat up gay guys, you have a, you're in the closet as far as I'm concerned. So then you have guys that, and I think that guys like that, this is what I really believe, I think they have feelings of sexual attraction for other men that they think is just kind of a psychological thing that every guy has, you know?
They think all guys feel that way?
Yes, I think they think all guys feel that way, and if they don't, or if they say they don't, they're lying. And most of the time, and that's why what they do is react very strongly the other way. They say that gay men are this and that, and they're really bad, and you should this and that, and you know, I hate them, and don't be that. And then they, some of them even get violent. But I, you know, to turn it into a life's obsession, and there could be other things too. It could be that they were molested as kids by men, and they confuse that issue with it. And, you know, so it's not an easy thing to figure out, necessarily what a homophobe is all about, but I do believe that at the very beginning and end of those guys, they got some issues, man. They got to work through, you know.
Think that Marcus Bachmann guy, though, you said you think he's gay on account of he talks like a poof.
Okay, bud, you don't have to use the word poof, all right?
No, I'm sorry, but I mean,
I'm just saying that other people, much more involved, gay people and people involved in the community have said, very interesting. All right, now, people with gaydar, you know, that kind of thing.
What do you mean gaydar?
But like, gay people have got great gaydar. Gay people know. I mean, there's just no question. And, you know, if somebody's gay says to me, that guy's gay, then, you know, I'm going to believe him because, what the hell? I am, you know.
Why? We think they got gaydar.
Yes, they do, okay? I don't know how else to tell you. Speaking of all of this other discussion, now here's a story that's kind of sad and shocking and not necessarily, we don't know, okay? Just like the Sandusky thing when it first came out, it was really, and then came lots of at least there was a lot of testimonial, so-called evidence given in the grand jury report and other things. Now, you know, the Sandusky thing's getting more interesting because McCready says, at least McCready clarified what he saw is what he saw. This is out of Philadelphia. This isn't Sandusky. This is a very, very well-respected sports writer, a baseball writer, a guy I don't think that any of us who follow sports, we don't know his name. I've been following and listening to Bill Conlon my whole life, it seems like. He's been a primary writer on the subject of baseball, but sports in general. You see him on a lot of shows. Bill Conlon has been accused of child molestation. Now, he has been accused by members of his own family who were girls, three girls and a little boy in the 1970s, one of them a niece who is now a prosecutor. Authorities said that no criminal charges are going to be pursued against Bill Conlon because the allegations of abuse happened too long ago. Bill Conlon is a Hall of Fame baseball writer and an author. He retired just ahead of the story's publication online by the Philadelphia Inquirer, his former editor said. Conlon's lawyer said his client would not comment about the story, but would fight the claims. Mr. Conlon is obviously floored by these allegations, which supposedly happened 40 years ago. He's engaged me to do everything possible to bring the facts forward to vindicate his name, said attorney George Bocchetto. The newspaper reported that the four accusers claim Conlon groped and fondled them in the 1970s, when they were ages 7 through 12. Kelly Blanchett, a niece of Conlon's, who is now a prosecutor in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and others told the newspaper that they were speaking out in part because of the child sex abuse allegations being faced by Jerry Sandusky, the former Penn State University assistant football coach. Like in the Sandusky case, people aware of the allegations involving Conlon years ago did not go to the police, according to the newspaper.
That's bad.
Yeah, I mean, who would the people be?
Maybe other adults. And that is bad. This is a tragedy, Blanchett said. People who have kept... This is the young niece, I should say, who's now the prosecutor. This is a tragedy. People have kept his secret. It's not just the victims. It's the victims' families. There were so many people who knew about this and did nothing. Prosecutors in Gloucester County, New Jersey, took videotaped statements from the four accusers last year, but said no charges would be pursued because assaults that occurred before 1996 fall under the statute of limitations. The alleged victims said they also came forward to highlight the shortcomings of those time limits. I thought they were getting rid of those things.
What?
I thought they were getting rid of the statute of limitations when it came to sexually assaulting children. I thought that that was out, man. No more of that jazz. As the result of the priests, you know?
I don't know, man. It looked like they still got them over there. What, New Jersey?
In New Jersey. Conlon had worked at the newspaper for more than four decades, starting in 1965 and becoming the beat writer for the Phillies the next year. He held that job for 21 years and became a columnist in 1987. He also was a commentator on the ESPN program The Sports Reporters and wrote two baseball-related books, The Rutledge Book of Baseball and Batting Cleanup, Bill Conlon. He received the 2011 J.G. Taylor Spink Award presented in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, and is honored in the Hall's Scribes and Mikeman exhibit. The Baseball Writers Association of America said the allegations would not affect his award. Now, there you go. There's
Why did they say that about Pete Rose?
Well, now, hold on for a minute. Pete Rose is accused of violating the rules of baseball. You can be in the Hall of Fame, as there are many in the Hall of Fame, and be a complete scumbag. And there are a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame that are scumbags. But as baseball players, they were, you know, top of the line. Pete Rose is having a problem because Pete Rose violated baseball rules on gambling. So his problems, his crime, if you will, was against baseball.
So you can get a baseball Hall of Fame if you're a child molester. You can't do it if you're Pete Rose.
Well, you guys are making it sound like the Baseball Hall of Fame is heaven, or it's like becoming a saint. It's none of that. It's the Baseball Hall of Fame. It don't mean anything. It means you're a great baseball player. You guys think going into the Baseball Hall of Fame makes you God, you know?
Well, it's pretty big.
It ain't big at all. It's big to baseball fans. Okay? That's how big the Baseball Hall of Fame is. It doesn't mean a thing to anybody unless you're a baseball fan. And if you're a baseball fan, the only thing it should mean... Oh, these are really good baseball players. It doesn't mean you're a saint. It doesn't mean your mother Teresa or anything approaching whatever it is that she was supposed to be. It doesn't mean that you're mother Cabrini. It doesn't mean that you're Jesus. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. So, according to the Daily News editor Larry Platt, speaking at a news conference, he said he accepted Conlon's offer to retire by phone on Tuesday afternoon. Platt would only characterize the conversation as painful. So he retired.
He knew.
He retired knowing that there was going to be something happening here. Platt said he didn't know about the allegations until Tuesday. He described the emotions in the newsroom as overwhelmingly a sense of shock, a sense of outrage, a sense of sadness. The Daily News and Inquirer are owned by the same company, the Philadelphia Media Network, and operate out of the same building downtown, but compete on stories. Inquirer editor Sam Wiskowski said at a news conference the story had been in the works for about a month. So they're owned by the same company, the Inquirer, that broke this story about their a guy that works at their brother or sister publication, if you will. In one recent column titled "Tough Guys Are Talking About Sandusky," Conlon questioned people who say they would have intervened had they witnessed child sex abuse. Everybody says he will do the right thing, get involved, put his own ass on the line before or after the fact, but the moment itself has a cruel way of suspending our fearless intentions, he wrote.
Really?
That's pretty interesting, coming from a guy that within weeks, was going to get nailed with the same accusation. Bill Conlon of the Philadelphia Daily News, that's the newspaper, so that's pretty heavy. And it might as well look and see what that other thing was about Sandusky.
Yeah, I'm going to find out that guy McCready, what he said.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show here on our News and Information Hour. Check us out online at philhenryshow.com.
The Phil Henry Show.
Woo!
the Bill Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Behind me is the, if you're watching Phil TV in HD, this is the Hobbit trailer. It looks pretty heavy, huh?
Dude, what's the Hobbit?
The Hobbit, I read this. You got to understand, all of this stuff was really big when I was coming out of high school and into college in the early 70s. The Hobbit is about Bilbo. Did you see the movie?
I saw the movie. Man, you got to understand something. Those movies don't mean, black people don't like those movies.
Why not?
There ain't no black people in it.
There are no black hobbits, if that's what you mean.
Okay, let's not get into the racial thing here now. I don't know why there's no black hobbits, because they were from the Hobbit place. Maybe there weren't any black people in Middle Earth. Do you think about that?
Yeah, how come?
I don't know. It's because Tolkien was a racist, you know?
Yeah, Tolkien was a racist.
There, okay. So now you know. I have no idea. I have no idea why there were no hobbits. No black hobbits, but there's no black hobbits. What do you want me to do, man? You want me to make a federal case out of the fact there's no black hobbits? Go dig up J.R.R. Tolkien and ask him why he didn't make any black hobbits. Because he was British and because there's no black guys over there.
But where do you figure they come from?
I bet you know what? The way, if I look at that Lord of the Rings, the way I read that Lord of the Rings, the black guys, anybody that was black in Middle Earth was part of all the, you know, like...
Yeah, the goblins and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I figured. All the black people are goblins and orcs.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me, too.
That's racist, man.
It is. It is racist. There's no question.
But fun.
Yeah, but fun.
Yeah, okay, that's great, man. You guys go have fun looking at all the goblins. Man, I think that's racist. Call the goblin, the goblin being black?
The goblins are, now there's an orc, is it? What are the ones they make? They make them out of mud. They make them, right?
What?
They make, the orcs are made, don't they, out of, I don't know, what the hell? If you spend more time than necessary wondering how this garbage is put together, you need a real serious analysis by a psychiatrist. I don't know, Robert, to answer your question. There have been all kinds of comments about Lord of the Rings, the Men of the West. See, that was another thing. Men of the West. Understanding that Lord of the Rings, in the minds of some people, is a huge commentary, a poetic, a metaphor for World War I or World War II, that there was a shared fear. You know, Carl Jung, who is a psychologist, you know the name Carl Jung? Carl Jung was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud. And Jung, when he was psychoanalyzing people in the 30s, in the 1930s, people would come in. And Carl Jung developed his theory on man and his symbols. He believes that we share memory. He believes the human race has a shared memory. The human race, together, all of us together, we share certain memories. One of them is of the first time we saw fire. Fire is iconic. It's an archetype is what it's called. Why do we all sit around and stare at fire? Because we have this memory that is literally millions of years old, the first time we saw fire. Mother is another archetype. Snakes are another archetype, and insects, because we shared our living space with them. That's why we give some snakes and insects give us the creeps. So Jung would hear people's dreams, and he said that when he was psychoanalyzing people in the 30s, he kept having the same dream coming in over and over and over again, war. People were dreaming about war.
So what did he say about that?
He said, based upon his theory of racial memory, that is the human race's memory of what has, you know, transpired in the history of our race, he felt that war was coming. And it wasn't really hard to see. I mean, the news was filled with a lot of really scary stuff back then. But he felt very confident it was, in fact, coming, because everybody was coming in with the same symbols and the same stuff vibrating through their subconscious about war. So now you're talking to me about Lord of the Rings. This is J.R.R. Tolkien's view, that everything in the West was progressive and good and cool and clean, and that the East represented some subhuman sort of subhuman existence. That wasn't, you know, that was very common in Europe in those days, you know.
Yeah, why does everybody think it's so cool?
Because in a lot of ways, Human beings, we do. We have this shared memory. Even today, as progressive as we think we are, as hip as we think we are, as very cool and egalitarian, and we love all of our fellow man, blah, 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 we have that shared, Europeans especially, have this shared memory of back, you know.
Yeah, when we didn't have to live with no black people.
All right, hey, whoa, whoa, what? I'm going to kick his ass. Come on, come on. Oh, I ain't hurting you, man. Bud, stop it. Get off him, Robert. God, man.
Yeah, what are you doing, man? Hey, Phil, I have to report Robert. I think he's a homosexual.
Stop! Come on. Cut it out, man.
That ain't funny, man.
I'm longing for the time in our past when we did not have to live with no blood.
Hey, come on, man. I got a show to do. I'm going to kick some ass. Understand?
Tell him to stop.
Bud, knock it off, okay? Jesus. Look what you did to my news copy. So anyway, Robert, it's an obvious fact, you know. And now, that's not to say a lot of black folks like to see Lord of the Rings. They think it's fun. It can be anything. You know, the great thing about mythology is if you really want to turn it, you can turn it. You can make it into something else. It can be a symbol. It can be something about just what's good and what's not good. What's good and evil, you know. And I know there's no black hobbits. What the hell do you want me to tell you, you know?
I think the elves look Asian.
What?
They do.
The elves look Asian. Yeah, okay.
Don't they?
There ain't one Asian actor in Lord of the Rings. There's no black people. This is all about, it's a European's view, J.R.R. Tolkien, a European's use of European Western mythology. And understand, we're talking about Celtic, Druid, way, way back, man. We ain't talking about anything. This is all pre-Christian. And that's the other thing that's probably got a lot of people bent out of shape, because this is all, it's all very pagan. Now, you know, when I grew up, in the Catholic faith, every time we heard the word pagan, we thought about, you know...
Yeah, like uncivilized.
Uncivilized, exactly. But really, that's not what it means. Pagan simply means non-Christian, pre-Christian, non-Judeo-Christian. It could be animistic, it could be African, you know?
Not African in Lord of the Rings.
All right. But in any event, when you look at this movie and you look at all the symbols, it's all very... very much ancient, and it's very ancient Celtic, it's ancient Welsh. Some of this language that Tolkien concocted for this book, I think, has some Welsh. It's got a little bit of Gaelic.
What Gaelic?
Gaelic is like Irish, an early Irish language, early Scots-Irish language. So, for better or for worse, that's what it is. And I think that, you know... There's all kinds of movies about all kinds of myth. I mean, look at a lot of the movies that come from Asia about the ancient Chinese ethic and, you know...
Yeah, but at least they got a few white people in those. That makes them better.
Why, you lousy... All right, hey!
Get out! Ow!
Quit. But if you keep exaggerating like that, what do you keep kicking his ass for?
Tell him, man, all he does is all these racial asides.
No, he didn't. All I said was they got white people in Asia...
He doesn't. He wants you to beat him up, Bud. I'm just gonna. The next time, I'm gonna have Robert kick your ass all over the room, and I'm not gonna do anything. Okay?
He wants to kick my ass.
Yeah, I know, and you want him to kick your ass. The show's over now? Great. Thanks a lot.
Well,
the world famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Phil Hendry and Dan Northcraft. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. It's philhendryshow.com. I'm just kidding. Philhendryshow.com. Make sure you visit us over there, and you know, God bless. Going to see you guys tonight for another world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Oh, don't forget, Friday night, Christmas Carol. Friday night, the Christmas Carol.
Woo! At least there's not going to be black people in it. Oh!
Phil Hendry. Jeez.